Hello and welcome to Baylor Connections, a conversation series with the people shaping our future. Each week we go in-depth with Baylor leaders, professors, and more discussing important topics in higher education, research, and student life. And today a fun topic as we discuss what's going on right now at the Mayborn Museum. Baylor Connections is part of our partnership with KWBU-FM. I'm your host, Derek Smith, and our guest today is Rebecca Nall. Rebecca is the Mayborn Museum's Assistant Director of Communication. She formerly worked as the Changing Exhibits Manager and Assistant Collections Manager. She joined the museum in 2007. The Mayborn Museum, right across the street from Baylor University's main campus on University Parks Drive, features a variety of exhibits for all ages, including this summer's blockbuster exhibit, Titanic, the Artifact Exhibition. Rebecca is with us on the program today. It's good to have you here. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I know it's a busy time for you all as school is out now, and now you have people coming in on summer vacations. You've got people coming in, various children's groups as well throughout the summer, and you've got a lot for them to see. And I've heard the Mayborn Museum. I've been there. It's great. And I've heard it described as a hidden gem in our community. Do you think that's an accurate description? And how have you seen it grow in serving the community in about the decade you've been there?
Well, I hope that we're becoming a little less hidden, and I do think that that's true over the past years since I joined the museum. When I started in 2007, we had 95,000 visitors come through the door that year, and we just closed another fiscal year, and we had almost 160,000.
That's great.
So it's a big jump. The museum opened in 2004. We were previously the Strucker Museum that was located on campus in the Sid Richardson Building. And we met with some museum consultants prior to opening, and they gave us an estimate that they thought we'd see about 80,000 people a year. So, you know, we feel very happy that we're exceeding those estimates, and I think that we've been able to prove ourselves to be a valuable resource in the community. And I can think of a couple of other big changes that happened over the years since the museum opened. Number one, we have a partnership with the Waco Mammoth Site, and we saw that not only open to the public in 2009 with a visitor center and a dig shelter, but it also became a national monument in 2015, which was very exciting. We completed a more than $2 million renovation of the Governor Bill and Vera Daniel Historic Village in 2012. The village was donated to Baylor by the Daniel family and moved to campus from Liberty in the 80s. And what we did in 2012 was really just make the buildings more accessible. We added wheelchair ramps. We added new walkways so that, you know, everyone could go out there. And we added some climate controls to the buildings, which is good for us in this
very time of year.
Hot summer. But it's also really great for artifacts. So we could actually put things in the buildings so people could experience actual artifacts from that period. Yeah, from the 1890s. I'm not sure if you've ever been to the village before, but there are different 9 wood frame buildings that represent a small community in the 1890s. So there's a church and a schoolhouse, a tenant farmer house, and a general store. And it's beautiful. It's just right on the river. And now we have a beautiful view of the football stadium.
Yeah, I was amazed when we went back there shortly after that renovation, just how much was back there. That's great. Well, let's talk about on the, kind of the front door there inside mm-hmm. the museum. Give us a brief overview. Maybe if people aren't familiar with the Mayborn Museum, mm-hmm. what would you tell them are kind of the main points of the Mayborn?
Well, we're a natural and cultural history museum. We started off as kind of a repository for different professors in the 1890s. And our collection only grew, and we bounced around to, different places on campus until our building opened in 2004, like I mentioned. And whenever that happened, we combined with the Children's Museum that was downtown, the Ollie Mae Moen Discovery Center. And so we have the natural and cultural history exhibits. We have a multi-floor discovery center. And we also have the historic village that I mentioned. So our building is 143,000 square feet. And there's just something for everyone and enough for anyone to spend the entire day.
That's great. That's great. Well, let's talk about what's going on there right now. The big one right now that we've been hearing about, I've seen a lot on the news here locally, Titanic, the Artifact. It's bound to be a pretty big draw for you all. Take us inside that. What are visitors going to find at Titanic, the Artifact?
Well, this exhibition is really a chronological journey through the life of Titanic. When you come into the exhibit, you move through the ship's construction and you learn about life on board. There are room recreations. You can see what a first-class stateroom would look like or in comparison to a third-class stateroom. You learn about the sinking of the ship and then about the amazing artifact rescue recovery. There are more than 150 artifacts in the exhibit that were actually brought down from the – or that were recovered from the wreck site. This is the largest collection of Titanic artifacts. So we're very excited that we get the opportunity to be able to host this exhibit.
What's unique about that, it sounds like, is how it really tries to immerse visitors in the experience. How does it take people inside what it was like to be on the ship beyond just seeing what was there?
Well, everyone who comes into the exhibit will receive a boarding pass, and that boarding pass is representative of a particular passenger that was on the ship. And you can really use that to color your experience. If you're looking at the first-class stateroom or the third-class stateroom, we have dishes that were used in the different dining rooms, and you can think, wow, this is what, you know, this person might have eaten off of dishes just like this, or this is where they would have slept. And then at the end of the exhibit, there's a memorial wall, and you can discover whether this person that you've been carrying around with for an hour or so was one of the lucky ones that actually survived that night. And so this exhibit is what you would call a blockbuster exhibit. Mm-hmm. So blockbuster exhibits are big, popular exhibits that have a powerful impact in the community and are also very immersive experiences. There's more of a production with this than some of our standard exhibits. This exhibit took 3 solid weeks to set up, 17 full days wow. in a row. Our crew was working. So just to kind of compare, the last exhibit that we just closed was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Secrets mm-hmm. of the Sewer, which is a very awesome exhibit. Everyone loved it. It was very popular. We had great, fantastic attendance, but it took 4 days to set up.
So it was a little over 4 times as much.
Yeah, exactly. So this one just really, it's a different experience. And there we have special stage lighting put in. We painted the gallery a navy to kind of bring the light level down, which is good for the artifacts. But it also just really, you know, it's a very immersive experience. We have an ice wall that you can touch so you can kind of get, you know, a feeling of how cold the water would have been that night. There's lots of details, music, and other sound effects that just add up to a very moving experience.
We are talking to Rebecca Nall of the Mayborn Museum, talking right now about Titanic, the artifact, their blockbuster exhibit this summer. And what did it take to bring something like that here? What's that process like? Because you look at where else it's going, to some pretty big names, mm-hmm. some pretty big cities.
Well, we generally book our exhibits several years in advance. So we just, you know, reached out to Premier Exhibitions. They're the company that travels this exhibit and told them that we would be interested. But we've really been working on this exhibit since 2015. That's whenever we signed the contract. So there are a lot of things that kind of went into, you know, us being preparing to host this show. We launched online ticket sales as a recommendation from Premier. We've never sold tickets to the museum online before, so it was really a great opportunity for us to kind of, you know, delve into that. We've had our memberships online for a number of years, but I think this will, you know, definitely be, you know, more convenient for our guests. And we're selling time tickets to this exhibit. We'll only sell a certain number of tickets every 15 minutes. And that kind of makes sure that the exhibit's not going to be overcrowded. And then if you purchase your ticket online, you can know that you'll have, you know, that time whenever you come in and you won't have to wait around. So we're excited about doing that. We also moved our ticketing desk back further into the rotunda so there'd be more queue space for people to line up so we don't have people waiting mm-hmm. outside because we are anticipating larger crowds during this time.
Do you have any idea how much compared to normal something like this might bring in?
You know, I think that we'll probably have at least a 20% jump in attendance during this period.
That's great. That's great. You know, you mentioned 150 artifacts recovered actually from the Titanic after it mm-hmm. sunk. There's probably a story in and of itself just in terms of being able to have those kept, saved, and preserved somehow.
Exactly. So we have 150 in the exhibit that we're hosting. They've actually recovered more than 5,000 artifacts. Okay. And so those are, I think, in storage in Atlanta, Georgia. And then there are other versions of this exhibit that are around the world. The VP of Collections was just here to help us install the artifacts in the exhibit. And she had just come back from China. And they just it's really interesting how, you know, pervasive this Titanic story is. People are interested in it all over the world. And she knows all the details about different artifacts and some things that belong to, you know, different people. And she'll know their entire life story and kind of, you know, really brings it together.
And that's, like you said, in part what people can learn when they get that ticket with the name of whoever they are representing as they come through the exhibit.
Exactly.
We are visiting with Rebecca Nall, Assistant Director of Communication at the Mayborn Museum here in Waco. We talked about it as a hidden gem, but maybe becoming more than that as more people learn about what you do. Attendance has increased over the years. And we talked about Titanic, the artifact exhibition, but that's just one exhibition of many. Let's talk a little bit about some of the others. Let's start first with Faces from the Southern Ocean. Tell us a little bit about that one.
Well, this is a photography exhibit featuring photography by J.J. LaRue, and it's of various inhabitants of Antarctica, including penguins, seals, and reindeers. It's really beautiful, and it's going to be on display at the museum until November, so there's plenty of time to get to see that, but we thought it might be a nice tie-in with Titanic.
That's neat. Well, I know we have a Baylor professor who I actually am a neighbor with who actually went to Antarctica, so I thought that was neat recently. You know, we have people who are traveling to these areas that most of us can't get to, whether it's learning some scientific research like the Baylor professor, Dr. Stephen Trumbull is, or taking photographs that we all can enjoy. And there's a more direct professorial tie-in to another one of your exhibits this summer, Northern Triangle. Take us inside that one a little bit.
So the Northern Triangle is on display in our Baylor Gallery until September. And this exhibit brings attention to the migrant crisis along the U.S.-Mexico border. And that phrase Northern Triangle refers to three Central American countries, Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador. And this exhibit contains different pieces that were collected along the border, including pictures that were drawn by children, news articles, and photographs. And so we're actually hosting this exhibit at the request of some students in one of the social innovation collaborative courses at Baylor, Child Migration in the Western Hemisphere, and that's taught by Dr. Hinojosa and Dr. Lori Baker. And these students approached us, the students in the class, and they had found this exhibit that was created by Borderland Collective, and it's been to a number of other college campuses kind of to facilitate discussion about this issue. And they asked us if we would be interested in hosting the exhibit. They arranged all of the details. They assisted with the installation of the exhibit and organized an opening reception and even a panel discussion back in April. And it's a really interesting topic.
What do you hope people take away from that as they visit and see more?
Well, it's a complex issue. And I think that, you know, museums more and more kind of delving into, you know, topics that are, you know, relevant to, you know, the landscape today.
You give a chance to have your own sort of voice in these important conversations, mm-hmm. which is really exciting. And I think that's neat, too. You mentioned Dr. Lori Baker and these students. You know, they were able to help you all shape in part what it is that you're sharing with the public. And what's neat about the Mayborn Museum is it brings in people from all across the state, all across the country who have no affiliation with Baylor University, and it helps bring people to campus. But it also enables students here at Baylor to be able to say, hey, we had a role in helping shape something at a museum that educates other people. Tell us a little bit about what that partnership looks like.
Well, we're definitely trying to, you know, find more ways to, you know, integrate Baylor into the museum, as well as Baylor research and students. And one of the major steps that we've taken in recent years is that we've joined the Portal to the Public network. Portal to the Public was started by the Pacific Science Center. And it's made up of a group of more than 60 informal science centers that work together to connect public audiences with current science in their community. And one of the main reasons that we wanted to participate in that network is it's a perfect tie-in with us being part of a university for the Natural Science and History Museum on campus. And we really wanted to be able to plug into the research that was taking place. So we offer professional development training to, you know, researchers, professors, scientists at the university, and help them think about how they can deliver their research to the public in ways that the community can understand and engage with. So we've partnered with a number of different departments on campus, including the psychology department, biology, anthropology, engineering, and that's just to name a few. And so after we have these workshops, the scientists, researchers, professors, students in these classes are able to share their research on the floor and engage with our visitors. And so it's really a win-win situation for everyone.
Well, I saw there was a Baylor Magazine article on Portal to the Public, maybe a couple of issues ago. And I saw one of the professors who shared at it talked about the fact that sometimes as a researcher, you can be a little disconnected sometimes from the public that it affects, or sometimes it's maybe harder to explain a little bit about what you do to other people. And I thought it was neat. They said when you do this, you know, when you're talking to school children, for instance, and having to explain it to them in a sensory way, or when you're talking to college students who may be very, very smart but not as immersed in the topic as you are. I thought it was neat how they said it kind of forced them to become better communicators about what they do and got them more in touch with the people their research shapes.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's really one of our main goals. You know, museums are informal education centers. You spend a certain number of, you know, hours, weeks, years in a classroom learning, and a lot more of your life learning outside of the classroom. And that's what we want to do is, you know, make a spark so people can have a connection and they want to, you know, continue to engage and learn during all of those hours that you spend outside of the classroom.
We are talking to Rebecca Nall of the Mayborn Museum. We talked about Antarctica, talk about Titanic, the artifact. We have talked a little bit about some of the other traveling exhibits. But in addition to those, what are some things people can find year-round at the museum? You talked about the natural and cultural history highlights. And what about the Genes Discovery Center as well?
Well, in our hands-on discovery rooms, we have a variety of topics, everything from bugs to bubbles. And we recently renovated a couple of our exhibits, including the light and sound room. That's one of my favorite areas. It provides lots of opportunities to explore and experiment. We have a laser harp and a walk-in kaleidoscope, which is just beautiful. We've seen a lot of Instagram posts with the kaleidoscope. And we even have a giant piano that you can, you know, walk on and play tunes with your feet. Another space that we renovated is for our youngest guests. It's a 5 and under space, and it's called Play Waco. And so we've kind of recreated some, you know, popular places in town. We have an H-E-B grocery store and a food truck where you can, you know, kids can serve, you know, different things to their families. Mm-hmm. And you can even go fishing on the Brazos. That's been very popular. It's packed every weekend. And then we have a new making and tinkering space called the Design Den. And it opened, I think, in October of 2016. And we do special programs and events in there about once a month. We're going to have more frequent programming during the summer. And you can do lots of different things. We make paper circuits, marble roller coasters, DIY instruments. In November, the main project that they did were sewing blankets. So the guests to the museum that day came in and they could sew blankets, which we donated to the Humane Society to keep their animals cool and or warm in the winter months.
So direct hands-on. You actually,
exactly.
Yeah.
Making an impact. And this summer we're offering our first maker camps, summer camps that kids can sign up for. And it's, I think, ages 8 to 12. The camps range, and they're going to be range in age, and it's late July to early August. And there's a lot more information about those camps on our website for anyone who's interested.
And I'll ask you about that website address here in just a few moments. We'll share that before the program is through. Now, I think you may have already described this a little bit, but I want to ask you more directly. So you talk about the role the Mayborn plays in the community, and not just in Waco, but across Central Texas and the rest of the state. What's most meaningful to you about the role the Mayborn plays?
Well, we really see ourselves as a major informal education center in the area, and we think it's important to support the community. We have a strong partnership with Prosper Waco. That's the collective impact organization here in town. And through our relationship with them, we've been able to host many families and students at underperforming schools in Waco through Family Science Nights. We provide science-based hands-on activities to encourage family engagement and fun that helps really build interest in that out-of-classroom learning that I was talking to you about. That really helps build competency in the classroom if you're interested in learning outside. Mm-hmm. We also recently launched a program called Mayborn Reach Out in order to get to, you know, underserved audiences in the community. So this program includes 3 free days throughout the year where people can come and enjoy. We also have free day passes that can be checked out at any of the local library branches here and in Hewitt. For anyone who kind of caused as a barrier to their visit to the museum. Sure. And then we partnered with the Museums for All program. And that was developed by the Institute of Museum and Library Services and the Association of Children's Museums. And that enables low-income families to visit museums at a minimal fee. So we, as part of our participation in the program, anyone who has an EBT card, an electronic benefits transfer card, can come into the museum for $1. And we've actually extended that to a family membership for $10.
That's great.
Our annual family membership is $95. And so being able to come in and pay one time, you know, $10 fee will provide, you know, unlimited free admission for you and your family for an entire year.
That's great. That's great. Well, Rebecca, we are just about out of time on the program. If people want to learn more about getting a family membership or supporting the museum or just learn more about the exhibits, how can they find out more? Where can they go?
Our website is www.mayburnmuseum.com.
Mayburnmuseum.com. Easy enough. Well, hope some people go check out what we have this summer, whether it is Titanic, the artifact, or whether it's your other exhibitions. And it's been a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks for coming on the program.
Thank you.
Rebecca Nall, Assistant Director of Communication at the Mayburn Museum, our guest today. And again, you can go online and learn more at mayburnmuseum.com. I'm Derek Smith. This has been Baylor Connections. A reminder, you can hear this and other programs. You can subscribe on iTunes or go online, baylor.edu/connections.